Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Cheva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 8, The Story of Pingala. Text number 2 and 3. Grasam sumrishtam virasam.
Grasam sumrishtam virasam.
Mahantam stokam evava.
Mahantam stokam evava.
Yadrichcha yaiva patitam.
Yadrichcha yaiva patitam.
Grased ajagaro kriyaha.
Grased ajagaro kriyaha.
Grasam. Food. Sumrishtam.
Clean and delicious.
Abirasam. Tasteless. Mahantam. A large quantity. Stokam, a small quantity. Eva, certainly. Va, either. Yadrichchaya,
without personal endeavor.
Eva,
indeed.
Apatitam,
obtained.
Graset, one should eat.
Ajagara,
like the python.
Akriya,
remaining neutral without endeavor. Translation and purports by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Following the example of the python, one should give up material endeavors and accept for one's maintenance food that comes of its own accord, whether such food be delicious or tasteless, ample or meager. Translation responsibly. Following the example of the python, one should give up material endeavors and accept for one's own
and accept for one's maintenance
food that comes of its own accord, whether such food be delicious or tasteless, ample or meager. Text 3. If at any time food does not come, then a saintly person should fast for many days without making endeavor. He should understand that by God's arrangement he must fast. Thus, following the example of the python, he should remain peaceful and patient. Purport. If by God's arrangement one is forced to suffer material hardship, then one should think, due to my past sinful activity, I am now being punished. In this way, God is mercifully making me humble. The word shayita means that one should remain peaceful and patient without mental agitation. Dishtabuk means one must accept the personality of Godhead as the supreme controller, and not foolishly give up one's faith due to material inconvenience. Tate nukampam su samikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipakam. Srimad Bhagavata 10.14.8. A devotee of the Lord always accepts material hardship as the mercy of Krishna. Thus he becomes eligible for supreme liberation. Omagyan Timarandasya Genanjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Pancha Kalpata Rubyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Hare Hare. So, in this section of the Bhagavatam, Krishna is speaking to Uddhava. And he is giving many analogies, many examples of the different gurus who we must emulate or follow. So now we are told that our guru is the python, which means a snake. Normally, a snake is not auspicious. Snakes are considered to be inauspicious. It says within the Bhagavatam that one may kill a snake. It says that even a saintly person is satisfied or happy when a serpent is killed, because a serpent or a snake, he is in the previous lifetime, he is an envious person, a human being. As a human being, you have a choice. It is a crossroads to elevate your consciousness or degrade your consciousness. If as a human being you degrade your consciousness, you take birth in lower species. What is the lowest birth in this world? What is the lowest? Of all the species, which is the lowest species? Yeah, the aquatics. Right? Because the aquatics are out there in the ocean, they cannot hear sound vibration. There might be a Bikaranam, but because they're deep within the water, they cannot take advantage. So therefore it is considered to be the lowest birth. Then, higher than the aquatics are the trees, the plants. And then higher than the plants are the insects. Higher than the insects are the reptiles. Higher than the reptiles are the birds. Higher than the birds are the animals. Higher than the animals are the human beings. And higher than the human beings are the devatas. So, if you misuse your human form of life, you may slip down to one of the lower species. You may become an animal or a bird or a fish or a plant like that. And then you have to wait by the process of evolution. This is evolution. Darwin's theory of evolution is not evolution. Evolution of the species does not exist. That is not considered fact. Darwin himself said the theory as it stands at this point in time is not conclusive. He never said it was a fact. He said it's a theory of evolution. But these days it's treated like it's a fact. Practically you go to school and they say this is how we came into being, like that. But there's no fact. There's no proof that that's how it happened. It's just a theory. But the fact of evolution is through the species. Once you go down from a human being, if you misuse your human birth, you take birth in a lower species, then you have to go through a natural evolution through every single species which is above you until you become a human being again. So if you get born as a fish, because there's many fishes out there, if you go into the ocean, there's many, 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 many millions of fish in the ocean out there, right? They all have to go all the way back through every single species to become a human being once again. Therefore it says, our philosophy is do not waste your opportunity as a human being. Because if you waste your opportunity as a human being, it might be a long time before you come back and become a devotee once again. So, the humans, they have a opportunity. They can go up or they can go down. You can elevate your consciousness or you can degrade your consciousness. That is your opportunity as a human being. So, if we use our consciousness properly, we can elevate to something higher. But if we don't, then we can go down. Now, normally, a snake is considered to be inauspicious. Right? In the Bhagavatam it says that a snake is an envious person. Someone who was a human but was too much envious of others. Right? Then if you're too much envious as a human being, you take birth as a snake or a scorpion, one of these kind of creatures. Envious creature. Who cause misery to others without provocation. Just like there's one story, I think it's a Buddhist story, and there was the horse and the scorpion. And the scorpion said to the horse, "Please help me get across the river." And the horse said, "No, because I know you're a scorpion." And he said, "You will jump on my back and you will bite me." And he said, "Why will I bite you?" He said, "If I bite you, we both drown." So the horse said, "Okay, that makes sense. So I'll take you across. So hop on my back." So the scorpion got on the horse's back. And the horse swam across the river. And then halfway across the river, the scorpion stung him. And the horse said, "Why did you do that?" He said, "Now we're both going to die." And the scorpion said, "I can't help myself. I'm a scorpion. This is what we do. We just cause problems to others. No reason. I'll just cause problems." So if you're a human being who is like that, then you become a scorpion or a snake. So normally, snakes and scorpions are inauspicious, not considered auspicious. Snakes are not auspicious. Yet, the Bhagavatam is saying that we should take as our guru the python. The python is a big snake. He's not small, he's big, they're huge. In South America, in Brazil and places in South America, the biggest snake in the world is called the anaconda. And he is 30 foot long. Okay, big. You see, if you go down to the museum, Melbourne Museum, you'll see some anacondas like that, dead ones, the skeleton like that. So 30 foot is like from here to, you know, almost to the deities like that. Huge. Big snake. So he is our guru. So why is our guru? What do we learn from the python? We have to learn from him. Two, as it says here, one should give up material endeavors and accept for one's maintenance food that comes of its own accord, whether such food be delicious or tasteless, ample or meager. So it means that a devotee depends upon Krishna for his maintenance. Right? This is shown in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and many of the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers. One can only get to the point where one depends upon Krishna for his maintenance if one has taste for devotional service. Srimad Bhagavatam says, Vasudeva Kata Ruchi. Ruchi means taste. You have to have a taste. Everyone has a taste in this world. People have taste for so many strange things. People like, they like to do all sorts of things in this world. So this is ruchi. Why do we do things? What impels us to act? It is ruchi. It is taste. We want something. We want some pleasure, some taste. So therefore, you can only give up acting in this world, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, param drishtva nivartate. You can only give up acting in this world if you get a superior taste or a superior experience, the higher taste. When you get something superior, then you give up the lower thing. Now you think, oh, this is not so good. Naturally, you become unattracted. Prabhupada explains in the Krishna book, in the 30th chapter of the Krishna book, the pastimes between Krishna and the gopis, Prabhupada said this is the proof or the way that we can measure our spiritual advancement. How advanced are we becoming as devotees? Prabhupada says, when you naturally lose your taste for material things, and your taste for Krishna is increasing moment by moment, then that's how we understand. Naturally, I'm not attracted to material things. I don't want to have illicit sex. I don't want to take intoxication. I don't want to gamble. I don't want to eat meat. I don't want to go to the movies. I don't want to do all these things. I have no attraction. So when we actually have a taste for Krishna consciousness, then we naturally lose our taste for the material energy. So this is what it takes in order to renounce the material energy. It cannot be a false renunciation. You cannot say, from today on, I will renounce Maya. How many times have you said that? How many times have you gone to bed and said, right, tomorrow I'm going to have no more sense gratification. Right? Tomorrow I'm going to be staunch. Fixed. Right? And then what happens the next day? You bloop. By 7:30 in the morning, you've already blooped. You're supposed to be in the kirtan, and you're down the back in the freezer, eating rasgullas. How many devotees have we seen eat the whole bucket of rasgullas in one go? Right? Because until you get a genuine taste for Krishna consciousness, then you cannot give up these lower things. You can't give up your attraction to Maya. You can't give up your desire for sense gratification until you get the higher a genuine taste. So the Bhagavatam teaches you must get Vasudev Kata Ruchi. It means you must get a taste for hearing Kata about Vasudev, about Krishna. When you have a taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna, then you lose your taste automatically for the material energy. But until you get that taste, then Maya will always allure you. So, it is described that if you want to control your senses, then you need to develop that level. Because what is being said here about the python? The python just sits, and he just waits for some food to come. He doesn't wander around, right? Doesn't go here like the other animals. They go everywhere looking for something to eat. The python just stays in one place, and whatever comes, right? Whenever something comes, then he grabs it and he wraps around and he constricts, crushes, and then he takes prasad. Hopefully it is offered. You remember in the Mahabharata, it happened to Bhimasen. You remember? Remember the pastime? Bhimasen went off into the forest to get something to eat for the Pandavas. The other Pandavas and Queen Kunti, they said, go and find something for us to eat. So he went off wandering through the forest, and then one python grabbed him and wrapped around him, right? And then began to crush him, and he couldn't move. And then Yudhishthir came looking for him, and then he found him. The most powerful man in the world, Bhima, who was the strongest man in the world, but this python had him wrapped up. And the python was Nahush. Nahush was one of Bhima's forefathers who had gone to the heavenly planets. But then he committed some offense and he was cursed to become a python. And then he took birth as a python and then he wrapped up Bhima. And then Yudhishthir came. And when Yudhishthir came, then Nahush asked him different questions. And when he received the answers from Yudhishthir, then he became liberated. And then he broke out of his python body. He became a devata again. So this is the way a python acts. He just waits. It says here, akriya, in the Sanskrit. What does akriya mean? Or what does kriya mean? Just like we have the term bhajana kriya. Bhajan. What does bhajan mean? What's that? Yeah, devotional service. Bhajan means worship. Bhajan. When we do our bhajan, sometimes say, how is your bhajan? How is your worship of Krishna? How are you absorbed in hearing and chanting about Krishna? Your bhajan means you're hearing and chanting, worshipping Krishna through your hearing and your chanting and your deity worship. This is called bhajan. So bhajana kriya, what does kriya mean? Activity, yep. Work? Yeah.
Process.
No, not like that. It means like force. Kriya means force. Just like one car hits another car, when that other car moves. Right? That is kriya. That is force. Right? It means there must be some. Bhajana kriya means you must put some effort into your bhajan. Right? If you don't put effort in, you don't make advancement. You make advancement in Krishna consciousness according to how much effort you put into your Krishna consciousness. Just like sometimes devotees say, I want to become advanced. If you want to become advanced, then you have to become advanced. It doesn't happen automatically. You have to put some effort in. Now, that is kriya. Kriya means some effort, right? Some force. You're putting some energy into it. So, the python is called akriya. Right? So what does akriya mean? He doesn't do anything. He just sits there. Right? Just waits and waits and waits and waits. And then someone comes and then dinner. So that is the python. So we're taught by the python, who is our guru, we should be like that. We should not make so much endeavor for the material comforts of life. Because, as is described in the previous verse, these things come automatically. When you're born, certain things are predetermined at the time of your birth. As soon as you're born, it is already predetermined how long you will live. Right? You have a certain amount of breaths within your body. As soon as you're born, you have a certain amount of breaths. Right? 9,242,632 breaths. And then that's it. And when they're gone, that's it, they're gone. That's one reason why we do not have illicit sex. Because when you engage in sex life, you breathe more rapidly. And you deteriorate your life. People think, I'm enjoying. I'm having sex life. I'm enjoying. Actually, you're killing yourself. You're shortening your life. People engage in too much sex, then they take years off their life. Because the more you breathe in this life, then it doesn't mean that you shouldn't do anything. Okay, I've got to stop breathing. I have to control. No, you have to keep your body fit. Sometimes, like at the farm, we do exercise. I go for a run in the morning, like that. So we breathe. But then, by breathing extra, then your body becomes more healthy, more fit, and then you can live longer through the day. You'll breathe less through the rest of the day. So you have to keep your body healthy. But do not use your breath unnecessarily. So certain things are predetermined when you're born. One thing is your breath. How many times? Another thing which is predetermined is how much happiness and how much distress you will get. Right? Your happiness is already predetermined when you're born. Right? You're going to get so much happiness. You're going to get so much wealth in this lifetime. You're going to get so much distress in this lifetime. Those things are predetermined. As soon as you're born, all your karma is stocked within your subtle body. So, as it says here, we have to be like a python, means that we have to accept what will come to us. Right? Don't make extra endeavor unnecessarily. Just like sometimes some people, and even some devotees, they become caught up in making wealth. I have to make money, I have to make money, I have to make money. Right? And when I have enough money, then I can do more service for Krishna. When I have more money, I'll do more service for Krishna. I'll give more money to Krishna. And sometimes devotees waste many years trying to make money, and that money never comes. Because it's predestined. You may work hard, but what's going to come is going to come. So we're taught to be like a python. Python means you don't make too much endeavor unnecessarily. Because what will come, will come. You hear so many people get money just by provenance. You know, some relative that you didn't even know passes away and leaves you $1 million. It happens to people, these things. So they didn't do anything. It was all predestined that they would get that wealth. So therefore, we should learn from the python. Don't become overactive in the material sense. Right? Save your kriya, your bhajana kriya, save your kriya or your energy for making advancement in Krishna consciousness. This is the important thing, because the material thing will happen anyway. Just like at the end of last year in December, there's one planet called Jupiter. You heard of Jupiter?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. In Sanskrit, what is it called?
Guru.
Guru. Right. And who is the ruler of that planet? Who lives on Jupiter?
Brihaspati.
Brihaspati. Right. And who is Brihaspati? Right. It's the priest of the demigods. Right. So that's his planet, Guru, Jupiter. That's where he lives. So if you want to find him, then Just go to Jupiter, if you can get there. So, in Jupiter, according to Vedic astrology, in December, Jupiter went into debilitation. Because there's 12 signs of the zodiac. And Jupiter takes, I think, like about 16 years to travel through the 12 signs. So, Jupiter goes through Capricorn. Capricorn is when Jupiter loses its energy. Right? When Jupiter goes into Cancer, Jupiter becomes very strong. Right? And then all the results of Jupiter, which Jupiter represents wealth and children and material prosperity, all these things, they come at the time when Jupiter is in exaltation. But when Jupiter goes into Capricorn, which means debilitation, then Jupiter loses its power. So then what happened? Jupiter went into debilitation in December, and then what happened this year? Worldwide. Right? Financial crisis. Global economic crisis. Right? So everyone's freaking out. Right? Every time you listen to the radio, like sometimes I'll listen to the radio to find out what's going on in crazy land. So, because I'm out of touch, you know, I live in a forest. You know, I've already gone to the forest. That's where I live. I don't even know what's going on out there. Like, yeah, I mean, the whole place could be totally, anything could be going on. I don't know. Like, I'm sitting in the forest and life's pretty good. But once in a while, I tune in, find out what's going on. What's going on the other side of the forest. So everyone's going crazy. Every time I turn the radio on, well, that's all they're talking about. Qantas just sacked 1,700 people last week. Right? That's all they talk about. And then Barack Obama, that's his name? Barack Obama? Then he is making his speeches, and they play speeches all the time on the radio. It's okay. There's light at the end of the tunnel. We will come out of this. Right, and then this happens and that happens, and Kevin Rudd says, "Don't worry," and you know, we've got financial stimulus, and they have the G20 summit. Is it this week in Washington? Right, and the 20 top. Don't worry, we'll get you out of it. You know, and we've got so many trillion dollars to pull you out. You have to understand, right, that material happiness and distress, they come automatically. You can't change it. I mean, you can change it to some extent, but what's going to come is going to come. Bottom line, Jupiter went into debilitation in December. He's not going to come out of Capricorn until next December. So, everyone just accept it. That's life. There's going to be financial problems this year. That's the way it is. You know, Jupiter represents wealth, right? Jupiter's not going to be giving so much wealth this year. That's just the way it is. So we don't freak out. We just say, okay, that's the way it is, and you know, grow some food and chant some rounds, and that's it. That's life. What do devotees do? We don't freak out. We just keep doing our service. Right? We just keep chanting our rounds. Right? Prabhupada said, what are the problems of life? What are the necessities of life? The necessities of life are food and shelter. That's what you need. Right? You don't need an IBM computer. It's not a necessity. Right? It's a problem. Right? Because most of my friends who are in Indian bodies work in IT field. And I can't work out why you would do that. Because you spend most of your life just fixing these machines that don't work. They're supposed to be solving the world's problems. And all you do is just fixing the thing. It's just creating problems. Right? One problem after another. So if we go back to the original simple way of life, the Vedic way of life, it is called simple living, high thinking. Right? Prabhupada said you need food, you need shelter. So you just grow some food, right? Then you build a house, right? You live in it. End of story. What do you need? Chant Hare Krishna. Right? Talk with your friends. Have some nice doses and uttapams. End of story. What else do you need? No, but then we have to complicate everything and make it all. That's not enough. I have to go onto the other side of the forest and I have to find out what's going on over there. And I have to act like all those people. Right? And I have to wear a tie. Right? Now, analyze how stupid the material world is. What is a tie? What does it do? What does it do? What does it do? If there is no more ties in the world, would the world stop? What does a tie do? Right, it's a piece of, right? So we create all these artificial necessities. Right? Where do you see any pictures from the Vedic times where people are wearing a tie? Right? What do you wear? You wear a dhoti because you need a dhoti. You wear a kurta because you need a kurta. You wear a chadar because you need a chadar. You wear a turban because that's considered civilized. Right? Right? You see, I was looking the other day in the Back to Godhead magazine, and there was some pictures of Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur preaching in South India, and he was wearing a turban, and he was sitting there in a shot about 1920s and 1930s, and everyone was wearing turbans because back then it was considered for a civilized man to walk out of home without a turban on. That was considered low class. The lower classes did not wear turbans. It was considered proper to wear turbans. It's cultured. So this is what we had. No one was wearing a tie. Not necessary. What is it? Just this thing that kind of... I'm still trying to work out what it does. No, not necessary. So this is the way the material world is. Right? Material world means so many unnecessary things. And what do? They simply distract our mind away from Krishna. What colour tie should I wear? Right? Spend half an hour in Myers or David Jones trying to work out what colour tie I should wear. Right? It's a waste of time. Right? And this is what we do in the material world. So many unnecessary things. So therefore, our philosophy is simple living, high thinking. Because if you keep things simple, then what happens? Right? Your mind is uncomplicated. You can think of Krishna much more easily. It's already difficult enough for us to think of Krishna. Right? We're already struggling with our mind so much. Why make it all the more difficult and complicated? That's what we do. We make life so difficult and so complicated with so many unnecessary things. So therefore, we should learn this example from the python. We should all become pythons. Which means we should not make unnecessary arrangements. Just make what is necessary. What is necessary, that's enough. Not unnecessary. Now, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are many examples of this. One example, if you want to go very high example, someone who was Paramahamsa Vaishnava, who was the grandfather, guru, the Paramparam guru of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. His name was Madhavendra Puri. He was so advanced in consciousness that he was like a python. He was actually living like this in Vrindavan. And he would not even go and beg alms. Right? Normally sadhus, they go and beg alms. They do madhukari. Right? You can go to 7 households, right, in one day. And you can beg madhukari. Madhukari means you're like a bee. Right? The bee, he goes from one flower to the next flower. That's how he gets his pollen or his food, right? So the bee goes to one flower, there's no pollen, then he goes to the next flower. So madhukari means that the sadhus, they're allowed to go to 7 houses in one day. Right? You can't just keep going and keep going and keep going, right? And just, you know, stockpile. No. Whatever you go, 7 houses maximum? Yeah, maybe you only have to go to 1 house. But if you go 7 maximum, whatever you get, that is your sustenance for the day. That is called madhukari. But Madhavendra Puri, he was not even doing that. He was not even going to beg at anyone's house. He was just sitting and chanting Hare Krishna and just waiting for whatever came along, just like the python. So then one cowherd boy came to him and he said, Baba, you are fasting. No one fasts in my village. Take some milk. So he gave him milk in the pot. And then he said, I'll come back and get the pot later. So then he drank the milk and he was thinking, who is that beautiful cowherd boy? I've never seen such a beautiful boy. And his mind was enchanted. And he kept thinking, where is that boy? Where is that boy? When will he come back and get the pot? And then he fell off, he dozed off. He only slept for a couple of hours a day. He dozed off and went to sleep for a couple of minutes. And in his dream, that boy came to him. In the dream. And the boy said to him, I am buried in the ground. Very close to here. And I'm very hot. I've been in the ground for a long time. Please come and rescue me. Take me out and cool me down. So then he woke up and he realized that that boy, that cowherd boy who had came to give him some milk, it was Krishna. It was God himself. And then he woke up and he realized that there was one deity whose name was Gopal. And that Gopal deity was buried in the earth. So then he got all the bridge buses and they went into the jungle and they began to dig and they found the deity of Gopal. And then they installed him on the top of Govardhan Hill. And now that deity, he is in Nathdwa in Gujarat. And he's worshipped as Natji. Sri Natji. He's famous all over India. In Rajasthan, is it? Sorry. In Rajasthan. Is it? In Rajasthan. Near Jaipur. Okay, I thought it was across the border. Okay. So then he's worshipped in Rajasthan, Sri Natji. So he's famous all over India, like that. So this is a deity which is found by Madhavendra Puri. So Madhavendra Puri showed us this example. He was just sitting there and he was just waiting. So if you want, you can try that after class. You can just sit in the courtyard and just wait. And see if anyone brings you some prasad. You might be sitting there for a few days, like the python. Devotees say, what is your service today, Prabhu? Say, I am doing python seva. Just sitting, just waiting. Someone will bring. So we may not do this. It may not be practical. In a preaching movement, it may not be practical. If you're a Babaji, okay, that may be practical. But the point is that we rely on Krishna. Right? We have prasadam, we have breakfast. So we go up and we take breakfast prasad. But devotees, when they have a taste for Krishna consciousness, they're not so attached to what they eat. Meaning that we are attached in the sense we want to keep our body healthy. We're not we don't just sit down and everyone starts serving out and they say, what do you want on your plate? You say, I'll just put anything there. I'm just a python. Yeah. Right? I don't care if I get pakoras or halibut or curd sabji or salad or fruit or milk, or I don't care what I get, just put it all there. No, we don't eat like that because that's impractical. We should eat simply and we should eat the type of foods which is healthy for our body. Some devotees, they like to eat khichdi in the morning. Some devotees like to eat porridge in the morning. Some devotees like to eat muesli in the morning, whatever. But the point is, you should eat healthy prasad, but you should not be overly attached. Sometimes you see before the food even gets out of the kitchen and up to the prasadam hall, someone has stolen all the puris, stolen all the curd sabji, the pakoras, like that. Nothing left by time. So that's not good. That means you are attached. This is not being a python. This is not accepting whatever comes. It means being overly attached. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that when he gives teachings to Raghunath Das Goswami in Jagannath Puri, Raghunath Das Goswami came to Jagannath Puri to take shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he took shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, please give me some instructions on how I should live in the renounced order of life, because now I'm a renunciant. I've given up my grihastha ashram. Raghunath Das Goswami had a very opulent grihastha ashram, but he renounced it. So then he said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what should I do? What should be my duty as a renunciate? One who is living in the renounced order of life. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that if you want to learn these things, then you should ask Swarup Damodar. That was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's humility. He said, you go and ask Swarup Damodar. And he put Raghunath Das Goswami in the care of Swarup Damodar. But then, after a few days, Raghunath Das Goswami said to Swarup Damodar, who was the secretary of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said, I want to get some special instructions from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about how I should live in the renounced order of life. So then, Sarup Damodar, he went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Raghunath Das Goswami was there, and Raghunath Das Goswami would not even speak directly to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because he was in such a deep mood of humility. So Sarup Damodar said that Raghunath Das Goswami has some questions he would like to ask you. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I've already told him that if he wants to learn about the renounced order, he should hear from you, but if he wants to hear something from me, then I will give these simple instructions. So Sarup Damodar said, please instruct him how one in the renounced order of life should live. So then he gave him some basic instructions. Right? So he said to him, one should not hear what the common people speak, and one should not speak like the common people. This kind of kata is called gramya kata. Gramya kata means what's going on in the village, right? And that's what most people speak about all day. What's going on in the village? These days we have the global village, so we know what's going on all over the world. But that's what people talk about all day. It's because it's gramya kata. It's just very common talk. It doesn't elevate the consciousness. So he said, if you want to advance in Krishna consciousness, do not speak like the ordinary people and do not hear what they say. Because it's very low and contaminating. It doesn't elevate the consciousness. So we should not associate too closely with the non-devotees and hear what they say. We should not speak like them. Devotees should not get together and just speak Ramigata. Prajalpa. Aruba Goswami calls it Prajalpa. It means useless idle gossip. Sometimes the devotees get together and it's just useless gossip. Oh, did you hear what she did? And did you hear what he said? And they always do like this, and they always, and who would they think they are? Useless gossip. Right? And then what happens? Everyone's consciousness becomes degraded. So therefore, we should absorb ourselves in Krishna Katha. When we speak with devotees, it should be elevating subject matter. So, Mahaprabhu said, do not listen to what they speak and do not speak like them. And then he said, do not dress opulently. Do not dress opulently. Because why do we dress opulently? Right? Most people in the material world dress opulently because they want to attract the opposite sex. Right? So therefore we will dress like very nicely. Oh, the women are attracted to me. Or the men are attracted to me. But if you absorb your consciousness on this bodily platform, then you cannot progress in spiritual life. So Mahaprabhu says, do not dress opulently. You should dress nicely because it's a preaching movement. Prabhupada said when we go out and preach, we should wear silk. Matajis wear silk saris, Prabhus wear silk dhotis and kurtas. You know, you can do that for preaching. But ourselves, we're actually very simple. We don't become overly attached like that. For preaching, we may dress nicely, but actually we're not attached like that. So Mahaprabhu says, do not dress very opulently if you want to progress. Right? And then he says, do not eat opulently, which is the point which is being made in this part of the Bhagavad Gita. If you want to progress in spiritual life, do not eat opulently. And then Mahaprabhu quotes some verses, and he says to Raghunath Das Goswami, he says that if one becomes a servant, which means a go-das, if you become a go-das or a servant of your senses, he says that if one becomes a servant of his tongue, of his belly, and or his genitals, he says then you cannot progress in spiritual life. You cannot advance as a devotee if you simply become a servant of your tongue, your belly, or your genitals. Then you cannot eat. Mahaprabhu actually says, he says, you cannot think of Krishna. Right? If you're too absorbed in trying to satisfy your tongue, too absorbed in trying to fill your belly, or too absorbed in trying to satisfy your genitals, then you cannot advance in Krishna consciousness. Right? You cannot think of Krishna. It is too difficult like that. So Mahaprabhu says that one must not eat opulently. Because if you become absorbed in eating opulently, so much nice prasadam, rich prasadam, right, opulent prasad, right, then the mind becomes agitated. Therefore, we are advised as devotees to eat simply. Just take simple prasad. Right? Prabhupada says that we can take a feast once a week, not once a day, or once a meal. Like that. Right? Once a week. Then we eat some opulent prasad once a week, just to satisfy our senses and pacify our mind and enjoy. But the rest of the time we should eat simple prasad. It means palatable, nice prasad, which is satisfying to the senses and to the mind, but which is simple. And by eating like that, then one's mind remains calm. If one eats too opulently, then one's mind becomes very agitated. Right? If you eat too much rich food and then you don't work hard to burn it off, your mind simply becomes agitated. We've experienced this many times. Right? You take rich prasad, right, very opulent prasad, but if you don't work nicely, if you don't do physical work to actually burn that off, then all that energy goes into the subtle body. If the gross body does not burn it off, then the subtle body will have to use that energy, and then the mind will become very agitated, because the subtle body does not need so much energy, not like the gross body. You have to feed it, but not so much. So Mahaprabhu says, do not eat opulently. And then he says, one should always chant Hare Krishna. One should always chant Kirtaniyaha Sada Hari. One should always chant Hare Krishna. This takes a lot of practice. We stop chanting all the time. Our minds constantly forget Krishna. Rupa Goswami's injunction, which governs all of our devotional service, is always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. Now, how is that most practically achieved? By always chanting Hare Krishna. Satato kirtiyanto mam. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, always chant about me. Mahaprabhu says, kirtaniyaha sada hari. Always chant about Krishna. So this is the instruction of Mahaprabhu, always chant. But that requires practice. Because we don't do that so naturally at this point in time. But it requires practice. And we'll see, we can measure how much we're advancing as devotees by how much we are absorbed in chanting. We're always absorbed in chanting. Always listening, always chanting. Internally or externally, we're always chanting the holy names of Krishna. Always absorbed in remembering Krishna. And then finally, Mahaprabhu's final instruction to Raghunath Das was, then one should always fix his mind on Radha and Krishna. But if you want to fix your mind on Radha and Krishna, then you have to do all the other instructions. Right? Means that you can't speak like materialistic people. You can't listen to what materialistic people say. Right? You can't dress opulently. You can't eat opulent food. Right? Then, if you follow all those instructions, right, the basic instructions, then, and then you begin to chant constantly, then you can always remember Radha and Krishna. Now, that was Mahaprabhu's instruction to Raghunath Das. Always remember Radha and Krishna. That is the goal of our movement. That is the goal of Krishna consciousness, to always remember Radha and Krishna. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prayojana, or his final goal, his ultimate message. But in order to do that, then you have to follow the other things. So, in this part of the Bhagavatam, we recommend it to be like pythons. So we should become like pythons. Python save a key. So you have to practice. But as we said, what does it mean to be a python? Right? It doesn't mean that we just act like a python, but simply we must be satisfied with whatever comes in our lives according to our predestiny. Right? What will come, our happiness and distress, materially speaking, that will come. But regardless of what we get, materially speaking, whether we get happiness or whether we get distress, we just stay fixed in our devotional service to Krishna. That is the message of the python. Like that. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
mentalities that is passive. When you're acting appropriately to accept what's going on, you reject what's going on.
Yeah. Well, we just have to amalgamate all of these different instructions which are given like that. So Rupa Goswami teaches us to accept that which is favourable for Krishna consciousness and reject that which is unfavourable for our Krishna consciousness. So that simply means that as devotees we have to ascertain under the guidance of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra what is favourable for us to advance. What is unfavourable? So broadly speaking, that means unfavourable means those things which distract our consciousness away from Krishna. Then we reject those things. And those things which help us or assist us to remember Krishna, then we accept those things. And then specifically how to do that, then we work under the guidance of our authorities. Does that answer what you want? Any other question or comment? Yes, sir.
Just wondering, like, to know that material happiness and stress comes automatically, to tell me, how do you realize it?
How do you realize it? You just stay alive. You just stay in the material world. Like that. How old are you now? How old are you now? 22. Okay, so yeah, when you get past 30, then you'll get some deep realizations about this kind of thing. And then when you get past 40, and then when you get into your 50s, and then as life progresses, then you get more realizations like that. So you will just realize in due course of time. The best way to learn is by hearing. That's called first class intelligence. Yeah, Shastra says, Krishna says, Dukala Yama Shastratam. Yeah, so Krishna says that the material world is a place of suffering. That's first class. Okay, I know it's a place of suffering, so I renounce. Second class is, okay, I've heard it's a place of suffering, but still I need to experience that for myself. So then you stick around and then Krishna will give you that kind of experience, that you'll realize that. And then third class is that even though I've experienced it, I'm still not convinced. Right. And I sing to myself, it's a beautiful world. And that's the philosophy of the materialists. Prabhupada says that if a conditioned soul takes a vow to stay in the material world, even God cannot deliver him. So if your vow is to stay in the material world, then even Krishna cannot deliver you, because that's your vow. So if you're third class intelligence, and even though you've experienced suffering, then you still think, oh no, there's some enjoyment, I will enjoy. Just like at the retreat at the farm, Dave Marita Swami showed that video on the old people, right, which was very confronting, like that, what it's like old age in America at this point in time. So there's one couple I remember, they were 90. I remember the woman? The woman had one of those diseases, Alzheimer's or what's the other one called? Parkinson's. She had one of those diseases. So she was not there anymore. She was just talking madness. So she was just crazy. She was just all day she was just talking incoherent statements. And the husband, he was 90 also, he was just like completely debilitated materially. His body virtually stopped. You know, he could, virtually all he could do was just sit. He really couldn't do anything anymore. He just sat there all day, just sat. He couldn't do anything. And she was just sitting in the other side of the room just talking all the time. And she was nothing she said was coherent. And then they interviewed him and they said, could you live without her? And he said, I couldn't imagine my life without her. And he said, they said, doesn't she annoy you or disturb you? And he said, yeah, she drives me nuts. But I could not imagine my life without her. You know, she's just in the corner just going, you know, everything she said was incoherent, just complete nonsense, just craziness. And he was so attached that he thought, no, this is good. And then they couldn't live at their home anymore because they can't look after themselves anymore. So they had to put him in a home, and they put them in this one room. And they're 90 years old. And they're just sitting there all day in this one room. And they've been doing that for years and years. And then they said to him, they said, isn't this horrible, living like this? And he said, yeah, it's horrible. And he said, this is not pleasant. You know, he said, the room's too cold and, you know, it's too small and, you know, we're confined and restricted and we can't really enjoy our lives anymore, you know. He said, but anyway, he said, the first night they brought us here, he said, we still had sex. He said, we still made out. Right? 90 years old. Right? Life is just about finished, just about dead. Right? No material enjoyment left. Right? Complete suffering. Right? The living entity is just experiencing complete suffering. But he said, but still, we had some material enjoyment. So it's okay. I can sustain myself. So that's called third class intelligence. So if you live like that, then you'll take birth again in this material world. Does that answer your question?
Probably as practicing devotees and working, sometimes we endeavor to make our situation better, like sometimes maybe looking for a promotion because others are very late. Why don't I give it a try? And then how do we have to really think, is it really favorable for devotional life if we endeavor for things, make life comfortable?
Yeah, so then Rupa Goswami, he says that achahara priyashas cha. So priyashas means over endeavor. So Rupa Goswami says do not over endeavor. If you can get a promotion, promotions usually mean more money, you'll get a higher salary. If you can get the promotion and it doesn't mean that you have to bury yourself in work, right, and then your sadhana and your devotional life suffers, then take the promotion. But if it means that you'll get the promotion, then it just means you become practically like a slave to some material corporation, some organization, then you have to think very carefully about that. Is that worth it? Like that. So you have to weigh these things up. The way the material world is now, it's not conducive for devotional service. It's very unnatural. It's not conducive for anything. Just like the World Health Organization, they said that by 2010, which is about another 6 months away, they said 50% of the world will be suffering from mental illness. Right? Practically everyone in the world is either depressed or what else do you get? You know, the whole world's just completely mentally disturbed. Why? Because it is not natural to live like this. It is not a natural way. The way they've created modern day so-called normal life to be, it's not natural for people to live like that. And because it's not natural, then everyone is very disturbed, materially, physically and mentally, very disturbed. It's not natural. So devotees, we have to keep our head above the water, right? Don't drown, right? So it's not worth it to go so far. I know one devotee, his guru told him, he was working in a prestigious company. And in that company, obviously, there was a lot of work involved because he was in a high-paying job and he had a very... But his guru said there was an option to join another company where he wouldn't be in such a prestigious position, he wouldn't get as much money, but he'd have more time for devotional life. So his guru instructed him to take that other job. So he took that job. So now he's spiritually is happier, he's more better off, but materially he may be receiving less, but he has a better quality of life. So as devotees, it's very difficult these days to keep everything balanced, but somehow or other we have to try to balance everything as much as we can. It's okay? Okay. Any other question? No.
Go ahead. Raghunath Das was an incredibly renounced and austere, well, this was certainly personality. He would at one stage in his career work at the singing choir gate and just take what was given to him. And then finally he was found in a he was really an extraordinarily renounced personality. And lived a very, very simple life. And so my question is, how do we determine what's optimum from our perspective, considering, you know, optimum for the Raghunath Das was, just getting what came from the people that passed on the street. He announced that to just be the rubbish, more or less. So, how do we take the instruction of not eating opulently in relationship to what Raghunath Das was doing in the beginning? Very extraordinary. None of us could even hope to eat it. Well, it would be just meditation, but. What do we do? Yeah, how do we manage opulence? What's opulence for
most people? Most of the devotees in the Krishna Consciousness Movement are Grihasthas. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that for a Vaishnava in Kali Yuga, he said the Grihastha ashram is a good ashram. And we see that most of the devotees are Grihasthas because that's our adhika. So we can't be renounced, and we certainly can't follow the renunciation of Raghunath Das Goswami. So most of us are Grihasthas. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj, I remember him commenting on this section, this pastime, and he said that for most Grihasthas, they should live middle class, like what we see middle class society be living. But that's how we should live. It should not be lower class, which means some poverty. Devotees should not live in poverty, because that's not, he said, that won't be an attractive example to anyone to be a part of our movement. Because if people are just living in poverty, they'll think, well, you know, I don't want that. And he said we should not be too opulent, like the higher class people who, you know, have big wages, but then they drive better cars and they have more expensive furniture, and, you know. So we should just be middle class people like that. So, you know, we just have middle of the road things. So we're not too materially, debilitated so that we can't focus on Krishna. But also, if you go the other way, as soon as you go the other way, you lose your focus as well. I know myself that just like my watch broke, right? I had a watch, it was a nice watch. My mother brought it for me, then it broke. So then I went to the watchmaker and I got him to fix it, and then he broke it again. So now it's totally useless. So he gave me this watch, right? And then I got it, and it's, if you look at it, it's all worn out. Like, is it some watch that someone dropped off to him and then they never came back to pick it up? So he just said, I'll have it, you know, because he felt bad that he'd, you know, broken my watch, basically. So then he gave me this for free. He just said, I have that. And then in the beginning, I was thinking, oh, well, that's a bit old, you know, I'll wear it for a few months. And then my next birthday, I asked my mother and she'll buy me another nice watch. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's how you think, right? But then after wearing it for a couple of days, then I think, well, what's the problem? Like, it tells the time, you know. I don't really even notice it most of the time. So it's just, you know, we don't need material opulence. As soon as we get attached, bhogaishwarya prasaktanam, as soon as we become attached to a little bit of material opulence, we forget Krishna. Like that. So devotees should live just middle of the road. Don't go opulent, don't go poverty. Like that. When I was in Mayapur last year, I was staying next door to Umapati Swami, and he would come out on the balcony in the evening and just just kind of take darshan of Mayapur. And sometimes I'd be chanting out there and he'd just talk and he'd just speak about with being with Prabhupada back in 1966, the very early days. And one thing he said was that Prabhupada gave him an instruction when he was a brahmachari in 1966-67, and Prabhupada said, not too much attachment, not too much aversion. So as a brahmachari, he said, don't be too opulent and don't be too simple. He said, be middle, even though you're in the renounced order of life, but just be middle of the road, like that. So that was the emphasis that Prabhupada, we don't see the Prabhupada, except before he came to America in Radha Damodar. At that time he was a kinchana, which means he had no material facility whatsoever. He was living like a renounced at that time. But then after that, when he came, then we never see the Prabhupada was living, in poverty. He lived simply, but he always, you know, he was comfortable, and he was never opulent. You know, he never caught up with, you know, like Bhagwan Rajneesh died with like 100 Rolls Royces or something. So we didn't see Prabhupada got like that. Prabhupada never became all, you know, focused on material, even though everything was being offered to him, but there was never... Like sometimes devotees would buy Prabhupada watches, which were obviously very expensive, and they would offer it to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada would take off the watch he'd have on, which he probably received somewhere else a few months ago, which was also very expensive, and the devotee would give him his watch, and then he'd just take that watch off and give that back to the devotee. Said, "You're giving me a gift, I'll give you a gift." So he was not attached. You know, just, and then at the end of his life, he had one very, in 1977, he had one nice ring, and he took that off. He said, "Give that to George Harrison." Like that. So he was never, so that's the way we should be, not to poverty, not to renounce, but not to, like that. So.
We had a phase in the 80s where everybody had to have
fancy watch. Mm. If
you had a Rolex, then you were top of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, and it
I bought a caveat for $20. And I said, well, it's just $70. That's what it was worth.
Yeah, because one of my uncles is a jeweler. And he told me, he said, all the stuff inside the watches comes from the same company. It's all the same. It's just what's on the outside. You know, whether if it's got Rolex or it's got Citizen or Seiko, then that's how much the price goes up. You know, but he said all the stuff on the inside is exactly the same because they fix all the watches. Same parts. They're not like, you know, they don't have Seiko parts and Citizen parts, and it's all the same stuff on the inside. Like that. So we get caught up on the externals. But as Tamal Krishnamaraj pointed out, it becomes very distracting for the public, for their perception of us if we go one way or the other. Because if we go too much in poverty, then they're not going to be attracted to our movement because they can't live like that and we can't live like that. And if we go too much the other way, that also becomes distracting because then they think, well, is this really spiritual? Is this genuine or what is it? Yeah, I remember the first time my father came to the temple. I mean, my father's not a good example of, you know, his consciousness is critical anyway, but he did make the comment when he came. He said, you know, how come all these guys are walking around? He was speaking to one of the devotees and he was wearing, like you said, a Rolex watch and he had like a Lacoste jacket on. And, you know, okay, you wear a Lacoste jacket or whatever, whatever. It's not a big deal, but he did notice that. And he said, how come, you know, you're becoming a monk, but they're all dressed like this? That doesn't make sense to people. So then, you know, the cars we drive, we should not drive heaps, because if we drive heaps, you know, things that don't, then they're useless. They're dangerous and they're useless, right? But we should not also drive European sports cars, because that's the other extreme. You know, that's for us, it's not for Krishna. Just like I remember many years ago, Hari Kesh Prabhu, who was the Swami then, the devotees did a marathon to buy him a Porsche in Germany. Because, you know, he's the guru and they thought we should offer the guru a Porsche so he can go around to all the temples quickly. So he said, okay, have a marathon. So they did a big marathon and they brought him a Porsche and they gave him a Porsche and then he sold it. Right, as soon as he got it, he sold it immediately and then used the money for the BBT or something like that. Like that. So that should be the mood of the devotees, not overly attached. I think so. Any other question or comment? Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.